Welcome to episode 36 of the Golf Betting System podcast. This week we're covering the John Deere Classic on the PGA Tour and the Scottish Open on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me we have European Tour expert Paul Williams and podcast pundit Barry O'Hanrahan. Good evening, chaps.
Evening, boys. How are you doing?
Evening, lads.
How are we getting on? We doing okay? I know you're feeling a bit sore, Barry, aren't you?
Yeah, got pummeled by two amazing putts by Russell Knox yesterday after taking Ryan Fox and running. Yeah, the two putts by Knox kind of stung a bit, but in addition, like the putts that Fox hit on 17 and 18 looked really good. You know, one for eagle and one for birdie, and yeah, just sometimes it just isn't your time, and you can play great golf like Fox did, and you still don't get the win. So I don't think he'll feel like he lost it, but it'll sting a bit. Yeah.
He didn't throw it away.
Seriously talented golfer. You hope that he can capitalize on his form and grab a win soon. Yeah, but yeah, you know, certainly one to keep an eye on for Lynx golf, and particularly the Irish Open. He seems to absolutely love it over here.
Yeah, I mean, you can't account for those bombs that that Knox nailed, can you? You know, at the end of the day, you make one of those, yeah, it's, you know, that's a big putt. Make two consecutively. I mean, they were in the same spot, weren't they? All virtually in the same spot. So you knew the line after the first one, but to execute both of them, yeah, it's huge, isn't it? Huge for him as well. Back into the top 50 in the world, I think, as well.
He is, yeah. Very close to the Ryder Cup spot as well.
Yeah, he's not far off, is he? Not far off at all.
Golfbettingsystem.co.uk, that's our website and where all of our content hangs from. Twitter, I'm available at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. Barry at A Good Talk Golf. Available on the podcast, Podbean, iTunes, TuneIn for Android users, Player FM, Podtail, and we have now also been listing now on Spotify. So that's great for Spotify subscribers. Just search for Golf Betting System in Spotify search and press the follow button. Naturally, subscribe or follow the podcast and tell your friends about the show. It's a big week this week, actually, chaps, because not only do we have the Scottish Open and the John Deere Classic, later in the week we are recording our Open Championship preview show. So that's going to be out, listeners, later in the week, probably Thursday. So listen out for that. We enjoyed the one that we did for the US Open so much. We're going to do one for the Open Championship and also for the PGA Championship later in the year. Talking about the course, tournament trends and the kind of players that we like early on in our thought processes. Please take time to rate plus review us on iTunes. It helps to keep all of our weekly content free across website, YouTube, and and the podcast itself. Right, I tell you, let's start with Kevin Na, shall we? From last week,
it was impressive, wasn't he?
I've written in this week's preview, you know, if you go to the well, you know, numerous times, eventually you're going to strike something, aren't you? But he did it very impressively, didn't he? I mean, I did notice when you go back and have a quick glance, I mean, there was a little bit of 50-1 about him, but mainly 40, which is never a most tempting price on a bloke that's only ever won once in, I think it was 350 career starts on the PGA Tour. But he'd been to the Korean Open, hadn't he? And I think he led there after 54 holes and he threw that away. And you think, well, if he can't win the Korean Open.
Yeah,
but every dog has his day, and you know, statistically, and we said all along, Greenbrier, beautiful bent grass greens, putting, you know, real putting fest, and sure enough, Kevin comes to the party, and when he plays like that, I mean, he was five shots clear, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, he held a lot of putts, didn't he? And you know, it is so much about putting that tournament, and he's not that kind of a finisher normally, is he? You know, we've sat here and watched a number of times when he's got into a position to contend and to potentially win a tournament, and he just doesn't do it. But, you know, he just pulled away from the field. He was nailing his putts, and, you know, there's an emotional interview at the end, if you could digest anything he was saying, but yeah, he's very, very impressive, wasn't he?
It probably, I mean, not to take anything away from it at all, but to actually just put it in context, it probably helped him to go from 1 week having, you know, near disappointment in the Korean Open to go to a course where he knows he can contend. It's not a bomber's track. It's one where he can, you know, his skill set fits in quite nicely too. So he immediately has an opportunity to capitalize on his form and, you know, correct the wrong that he had the week before. You know, if you imagine he was going to a bomber's track last week instead of a TPC Deer Run, might have been a very different story. But, you know, just the stars aligned quite nicely. And he's an extremely likable guy. And I think he gets an awful rap for being a slow player.
He's slow, isn't he? Yeah.
I actually don't think he's particularly slow. He just, you know, people kind of latched onto it. And it's just been kind of a rhetoric about him ever since.
he's on the slow side, and
a little bit, yeah. But he seems to become the poster boy, or the target first, you know.
He takes a lot of stick.
That should be spread around a bit, in my opinion. But you know, it shows what, you know. I thought the interview was brilliant at the end. It shows how big a deal it is to win. You know,
massive. Yeah,
he's a quality player. I mean, he's pretty much. He's normally resident top 50 in the world without ever winning, which is an amazing achievement. Second this year at Riviera, sixth at that Byron Nelson Championship that they held at the new course, Trinity Forest, and also fourth at Colonial. And then he went to that Korean Open and was fifth. I think he led, or he went out in the final group. So it's been coming. So, you know, as ever, in retrospect, it's probably something. I did actually consider Nah, but as ever, it's always that nagging doubt. Well, I'm effectively tipping up 40-1 for a place because he won't win.
Yeah.
But, and it's interesting, so this was something that Jeff Feinberg tweeted out last night. You think about the PGA Tour this year. I'll just read out some names. Gary Woodland, Bubba Watson, Paul Casey, Phil Mickelson, Francesco Molinari, Ian Poulter, and now Kevin Na. It's the year of winless streaks being broken, isn't it, on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, a bit of momentum with it, and people start to get some belief, don't they, when their time comes. But then it's so much of this is down to that one day. You get yourself in position, and you're going into a Sunday, and can you produce that, usually that putting day on the Sunday that gets the gets you over the line? And Noah produced it yesterday. Casey produced it a few weeks back when he won.
You know, we need to be looking after. No, it's the price again, isn't it? It's like Charles Howell III. You know, is he going to win this year? 2007, the last time he won, Charles Howell III. Mm. But he keeps going off at like 28-1, 33-1.
You can't touch it. Touch it.
It's not tempting, is it? Not tempting at all. Talk to us quickly about the Irish Open. What were your thoughts and takeaways on that particular tournament?
Yeah, well, you know, aside from what Barry said with the, you know, Knox nailing those putts that eventually converted, it was that was impressive, I've got to say. A bit disappointing for me because I had both Pavon and Jacqueline both kind of in the slipstream going into the final day. They're both tied six, and given the respective prices we had from 250s and 300s, you know, a place from either of those guys, and it's looking like a cracking week. And they both just couldn't get it going. Actually, Pavon got himself into a position where he could have contended. He could have seriously contended if he hadn't started throwing shots away around.
That's when it went seriously wrong.
Yeah. And it's this thing, isn't it? You know, you get a player in, you back a player, gets into that position where he can produce, you know, a run at it. He's in a position to potentially win the tournament. And then you kind of get towards the end, it hasn't happened, and they're hanging on, or you're hoping they're going to hang on for a place to kind of reward the big price that you got. And both of the guys finished a shot outside it would have been a share of sixth place, but it would still been a nice profitable week. But neither of them could produce a birdie on the way back. They both didn't make a birdie at the par five coming home, and kind of both just plodded through. And ultimately, it was disappointing. But the course is a fantastic course. From, you know, the various bits I saw over the 4 days, it looked really, really good. And, you know, the feedback from the players was strong. And I think it's a good, you know, pre-warm-up for this week, which is the, you know, proper warm-up for Carnoustie next week, and getting into this kind of mindset of playing proper links golf and on firm, fast courses, it can only be a good thing for the players that attended, and you know, kind of whets the appetite for this week and next, I think.
I think we were in the same boat this week, weren't we? Because I had Lahiri.
Yeah, no, he was a couple of... Yeah, was he a shot or a couple of shots clear at one point? I'm sure.
Wow.
Sort of, yeah, it was.
And then he had a complete and utter collapse. I think he shot seven over over the last 36 holes. So that one goes in the old memory bank.
He's much more of a first round leader bet for me, Lahiri. I must say, he's the kind of player who can get out of the blocks quick. But there's a few of them just didn't perform. You know, Simpson, you wouldn't have put him down as a. What is he, six over on Saturday? It was
absolutely. He fell around. Bubba Watson in the final round, and of course Xander. You know, this was the whole point. You looked at that. You looked at those leaderboard at 36 holes. You're thinking you've got Watson in the mix, the defending champion Xander's in the mix, Webb Simpson's in second. He led after the first day, didn't he? Second, you know, second or third, and you're just thinking, well, you know, it's going to take a great, you know, a really strong challenge for someone to beat one of these elite players.
Yeah.
But that tournament's always been the same. No player has ever led even a round of that tournament and won it. And, you know, that struck Webb Simpson, of all people, this year.
That's odd, isn't it? That's an odd stat, isn't it?
It's a weird one, isn't it? And Kevin Nahl, you know, snaps it up at 40-1. Thanks for coming.
So who made it into the Open from the US event?
Now you're asking.
Must have been Kelly Kraft.
Yes. Austin he played Cook. Really well, didn't he?
Kraft. Yeah, he did, yeah. Austin Cook and Kokrak, wasn't it?
It was Kraft, Kokrak, Snedeker and Austin Cook, I think.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, because there's four of them, wasn't there? Yeah, because Snedeker's just pulled out of the John Deere, hasn't he?
Is Neiman playing in the Open Championship?
I couldn't tell you off the
I don't think he is. I think he had an awards position if he stayed amateur, but he's given that up clearly.
Right.
Yeah, I was wondering how they actually make, how does it work in terms of these ties? Because he'll have tied with Cook and wouldn't he? So
as far as I know, it's
world ranking.
World ranking. I'm pretty sure it's world ranking, yeah. So it's a fair way to break.
Yeah, so Joel Darman will be just as gutted, I'd have thought, because he missed out to Cook as well, yeah?
Yeah, we've got another chance this week, I guess, Neiman, isn't he?
There's only one spot available over there, though, this week.
Yeah, there is,
Yeah, there is. There's three over in the Scottish, but just one in the John Deere, isn't there?
It really is last chance saloon over there. Well, like, back to the Irish Open, I was really... really impressed with that golf course. I don't think I've ever seen a links in as good condition. And my dad was up there for a day, and the manager of our golf course was up there for a day. I didn't go up myself. It's a 4.5 hour drive each way, and you know, the logistics didn't work out. But they were both saying that they've never seen a links golf course as just gorgeously set up as it was. They clearly put an awful lot of effort into it. And if you saw the overhead shots, you could see holes from the old links there were almost blackened out. So they'd put all of their efforts into the Glashidi Links course. And I thought it played, I thought they set it up really well. You know, it was soft, well, not quite soft, but it was scoreable on the first day to a certain extent. And they just let it kind of creep to firmer and firmer as the week went on, which it turned out to be a beautiful challenge. And I'd say the pictures that went over to the States, there'd be a lot of holidays be booked to the to Donegal and the north of Ireland. So it went off really well, and you know, very proud as an Irishman that it looked so good, and we finally got some decent weather as well.
Yeah, it did. It looked spectacular, didn't it? And I think you're right. They didn't let it get out of control, but it was still a fair test, wasn't it? And the winning score didn't get out of control either, which is always a good indication of a decent setup.
I take it then, Paul, you're expecting a very, very similar challenge this week at Gillane, because I know I spoke to you about this on Friday when we were out and about. You said that when they played here a few years ago and Fowler won, the golf course that week was particularly soft.
Yeah, it was.
And gettable, but
yeah. It's a par 70.
Not going to be like that. It's not going to be like that this year. This year, is it? In terms of turf conditions.
No, it's going to play differently, definitely. So yeah, the track is it's a par 70, 7,133 yards. But as a par 70, you know, you're unlikely to see the score get completely out of control unless the conditions are particularly soft and particularly receptive and particularly calm. And if you go back to 2015 when they played this last time, 12 under was the winning total from Fowler, and it was particularly green, it was particularly lush. It'd been a wet start to the summer over in the UK that year, and you know, even with those conditions, the scoring didn't get out of control. It was 12 under. The guy that was Kuchar and Jacqueline who were tied for second at 11 under, and then you know, if you've got the bulk of the field are in single figures under par or worse, then you know that the test has been set up, and it is fair without being excessive. There's another little bit of form that can kind of back that up. So they played some Open Championship qualifying back in 2013 there as well. And the winning score from that was 2 under over 2 rounds. And they played it as a par 71 on a slightly different setup. They use a kind of an amalgamation of two of the three courses for this event. And it was a slightly different setup for that. But you know, you're talking about the same terrain, effectively. So for the winning score to be 2 under over 36 holes shows you that it can be a pretty fair and strong test, this particular track. And of course, with a links set up, it's going to be down to the conditions. And as you said right at the start there, it's going to be firm, it's going to be fast, it's going to be proper links golf. The only thing we're unlikely to get, if the forecast is right, as I'm looking at it right now, is it's not going to be particularly windy. So it's going to be all about the ground conditions and how firm and fast and tricky that makes the test this week. But yeah, I can't see the scoring getting out of control as a result of that. You know, even in good conditions with light winds, if it is firm and fast, I think it's going to pose quite a challenge for the players this week.
It looked quite exposed to me from some of the videos and the tweets that I've seen out there.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
A lot of exposed, you know, tees, particularly, you know, absolutely nothing between you and the sea and the wind that's whipping in off the coast if it's coming from that direction.
Yeah, it's not. You've got some fantastic views of the Firth of Forth over there. It's just down the coast from Muirfield and Archerfield Links, where they played they play that Paul Laurie match play a few years ago. So it's all in that kind of neck of the woods. But yes, you're right. It is open and exposed. It's a pretty, visually it's quite straightforward from what I recall. It's there aren't many blind shots. It's one of these tracks that just relies on the elements to protect it, but it is quite relatively tight, and the greens are relatively small for a links. So, you know, it is a challenge from off the tee, and you know, with the typical undulating fairways you get with links golf, tight lies, and the bunkering, the pot bunkers here are particularly penal. You know, you're probably talking a half a shot penalty on average every time you go in one of these bunkers. So you just got to be keeping yourself out of those. So there's an element of accuracy required here. There's an element of strategy and tactics required. You need to be able to play links golf and the style of links golf that's gonna help get you around the track as well. I think when you kind of drill into this, and you know, we've only really got the 2015 event to look into, and as I say, it was played in what are going to be quite different conditions. Things that stand out to me is that nearly everyone who made the cut was shooting around about -4 to -6 on the par fives over the course of the week. So everyone was making a birdie on every other par five, if not slightly more. There was very little variance there. So the par fives are unlikely to have much bearing on the outcome of this tournament this week. Which kind of suggests then that the driving distance is going to be negated, particularly with it being firm and fast. I expect you're going to find, as we did last week, that people have taken far less than driver off most of the holes, and it's more about positioning off the tee, trying to miss the bunkering, and trying to keep in play so that you can be set up and attack the pins with the second shot. It's interesting, again, looking at the stats from last time as well, because if you look at the likes of Fowler, who won, Jack Lann and Kuchar, their tee to green stats were all particularly poor. And that was in soft conditions. So, you know, they were missing fairways, they were missing greens. It all came down to that particular year, how they performed on and around the greens. And each of them had scrambling stats in excess of 80%. They all ranked in the top five for scrambling in the week. And, you know, it ultimately it just came down to the birdies that Fowler made as he was coming home. You may recall, I was on Jacques Lann that week at 250-1. And I think he was second going into the final day. And got himself into a great position where he could have won. And then Fowler, as Fowler does, birdied three of the final four to pull himself away from the from him and Kuchar. And I remember that Jacques Lann had his approach shot on the final hole. He needed to hole it effectively to force a playoff. And he played a fantastic shot. You know, it missed by a matter of inches for him to hole for an eagle to force it into extra time, which was, you know, extremely unlikely but quite exciting at the same time to see him have a proper go at that. But yeah, going back through the stats, it was far more about short game and putting and particularly scrambling than it was tee to green. But I think for me the conditions this year probably changed that. And if you kind of got, you know, bogged down looking at those stats and thought, like, this course is going to be all about short game, it's got to be nothing else, it's going to be all about short game, because that's what the 2015 stats tell us, then I think you could be wrong, because a firmer, faster course, the people will be running through fairways quite readily. They're going to, if you're running through fairways and playing out the rough, you're not going to be able to hold these greens, I don't think. Or you're going to have to play shots into the greens that are, you know, you're landing it short and running it up. And it's going to be a much more linksy style test this time round than it was before, I think, because clearly players could play the ball through the air far more with a softer course. So,
well, is it quite telling that last week we had a scenario where Knox was first for GIR, Fox was third, John Rahm was 11th, and Eric Van Rooyen was fifth. So they made up four of the top five.
Yeah. I think whereas you looked at the GIR stats from 3 years ago, I think you can miss fairways here, as you could last week, and you can recover from it. The grass looks particularly long in places, and yes, you're going to get some bad lies, but you're also going to get some good lies in what look like awful situations, and you're still going to be able to find your way onto the greens. But I think you're going to need to find and manage your game in such a way that you can maximise those greens in regulation. I don't think it was going to be quite so heavily geared towards just a short game expertise or a short game, you know, week that gets you the job done here. We'll see. I mean, I'm not going to put all of my eggs in one basket, I think, is the message that I'd say from that, because I think that could be a mistake to go completely down one route or another. Could well be a mix of players that end up at the top end of the leaderboard. And
there's some nice price winners of this event as well recently, isn't there? A couple of 50-1s, 2017, Rafa Cabrera Bayo and Alex Noren, 50-1, 2016.
Yeah. Fowler was 22s when he won here, and clearly, you know, as an elite player, that's not a bad price relative to what you're getting nowadays.
No, even Phil Mickelson was 22-1.
Yeah, he was, yeah. That was the year he went on to win the Open the week after, wasn't it? So yeah, there is some scope for you're always going to get some, you know, potential for some odd results, I guess, in this as well, because players are going to be coming here and not necessarily, focusing on winning this particular event. Some of the players coming over, and there's quite a few of the Americans come over to play as you normally see, who are going to be more about acclimatising and honing their game for next week as opposed to going all out to win this. You've got the other factor that there are three Open Championship places up for grabs. You've got the other factor that it's a Rolex Series event, and clearly that's going to be a good one for some of the European Ryder Cup hopefuls to make a decent run at as well. So you've got a number of different motivating factors here this week, which could help influence and dictate which angle and which way the event goes over the course of the 4 days. It's going to be a fascinating one. I thought last week was a really good kind of introduction to the 3 week, the true 3 week links stretch that we've got, and hopefully this week follows it in the same kind of vein as well. And other things that I've picked out, I mean, going into form of the players who've come in and won this over the last, or going back to 2010, every one of the players who've won this since 2010 had a top 10 in their last four starts. So they all had shown some kind of form of some description in their previous four starts. So again, you can't assume that those kind of stats are always going to continue, but it's a fair indication that you're going to need a decent enough game coming into this kind of a test to contend and potentially win it. And again, if you look at all of the people who've won it, they didn't necessarily have a sparkling form in the Scottish Open per se, but each one of them, going back to 2010, had a top 10 at least in Scotland, in one of the various Scottish events over their career. So a little bit of local form of some description, a good bit of tangible recent form also seems to be a factor this week, or at least it has been historically. And as you say, the prices have been backable without being overly long, without being overly short as well. There's kind of some good mid-range 50 to 100 to 1 type winners in there as well. So I think there's a few factors to consider. And the other factor, and how much you read into this, I guess it will depend on your personal opinion, but bear in mind, these guys are going to be playing the final round on Sunday when the World Cup final's on. And some of the English players, some of the French players, the few Belgian players in the field, they could all have a vested interest in what is going on. And I could be wrong here, but I'm sure that some of them will be having more than half an eye on what's going on in Russia at that point. And there were some comments made by Andy Sullivan last week, and I suspect some of it was flippant, and I'm sure it was, but it's got to be on these guys' mind. If England get through, or if Belgium get through, or if France get through to the final, that will be being played while some of these guys are potentially out there trying to win the golf tournament. Will it affect them? As professionals, it probably shouldn't do, but I don't know. I think it's another dynamic that just needs to be considered, whether you make a decision off the back of that or not. You can't make a decision right now because the semis haven't been played. They're not going to be played until Tuesday, Wednesday.
I think something we've talked about the last few weeks has been desire of players and who has really needed a result. And if you go back to the Travellers, it was Bubba.
Yep.
We know that Bubba plays well on that track, and he needed another win just to cement his Ryder Cup spot.
Mm-hmm.
The week after that, Francesco didn't play the Italian, didn't play the Open de France. Knew he was playing some of the best golf of his life. Went to a new track at Potomac and absolutely destroyed a relatively weak field.
Mm.
I'm trying to recall what happened at the Open de France. What happened? Help me out on that one. Who won the Open de France? I've forgotten.
Paul. Sorry, but I've gone. I'm adding something completely else. You've thrown me completely. Give me 2 seconds.
Who won the Open de France a couple of weeks ago?
Who's fastest at Google?
Oh, it was Alex Noren, wasn't it? Yeah. Alex Noren.
Yeah.
Again, and he was right. He was right in the mix of a battle for the Ryder Cup. And then last week, you've got Russell Knox, who's been chipping away in the USA for his, he focus is on the PGA Tour. That's where he lives now, over in Florida. But he's come over here, second at the Open de France, knows that he's got a real opportunity to push some buttons and goes and wins at the Irish Open. And even in America, you know, you've got Kevin Na that's taking a decent opportunity there to take his second PGA Tour title, again, in a relatively weak field. So I'm just looking, I mean, it's a loaded field. I'm just looking at that field and I'm trying to get my head round who of those guys at the top of the betting seriously need a result this week.
Mm. I'm struggling at the top of the market. I'm struggling.
Guys, it's Martin Kaymer.
Well...
Yeah, well, no, yeah. You can't disagree with the theory of Martin Kaymer. I'll give you that.
Surely, like, okay, whether he can pull it off or not, but his motivation has to be as high as anybody's. You know, he missed the win in Germany 3 weeks ago. He's saying that he doesn't really need to do anything for the Ryder Cup, which we all know is absolute bullshit because he needs to earn his spot on the team.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's getting a pick. So...
He's not.
You know, if he's playing a flat, fast links golf course, what did he do in Pinehurst? He putted his way to victory from off the greens. It's the kind of setup that could work for him, and he could draw the vibes from that Pinehurst win.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can see the logic. I wonder from the position that he was in Germany that he should have converted from, or he should have got into a player for the very least.
So should Kevin Na last week in Korea, but he didn't.
Yeah,
it's very true. It is very, very true.
He's not the only player who's hyper motivated this week, but that's just one that kind of popped in my head there as we're kind of talking about it.
Essentially, I mean, the logic that you've just described there is exactly where I've gone with one of the two players that I've already backed today. Before I do that, you can say what you were going to say, Steve. Sorry, interrupt.
Well, there's two others that are just staring to me. One of them was second, I think, on his last outing for greens in regulation, and I still think he would want, in an ideal world, he would want to earn his way into the European team. And I think Poulter, I'm seeing Poulter at 28-1, which I think is a very good price on Ian Poulter.
Yeah.
And he was he second or third at Muirfield just down the coast in 2013?
Yeah, it was third, I think, yeah.
I think Poulter, now that Knox, you know, there's a lot of players now looking like they're going to need picks, yeah? Garcia, Stenson's going to need a pick. Now, if Poulter could force his way into that team automatically, that takes the pressure completely off him. I know he gets a pick anyway, because he will. He'll get a pick. He's the talisman of the team, and he's done so much, so well in the States this year. I think he gets a pick. But I think he will want to prove to Bjorn that he can play links-style golf and play well on the European Tour. I could see someone like Poulter going very, very well this week. And and you're seeing him at the same kind of price as, say, the defending champion Cabrera Bello, and I just don't see that in a million years. I think Fitzpatrick's struggling as well, isn't he? So, for me, it's Poulter that's shouting to me to back him at that price.
Yeah, he certainly ticks an awful lot of boxes, and I haven't discounted him from where I'm going with this right now. But yeah, I can see the logic. Again, I don't want to start using the football as a reason to or not to back people, but there's an element there to consider as well, I think. But yes, along exactly the same lines, one of the guys I have backed today is Graham McDowell. Now, for exactly the same reasons, he's going to need to do something spectacular to get into the team or to raise his head above the parapet and tell Thomas Bjorn that he needs to be picked. And he's been generally in poor form or struggling until relatively recently, where he started to pull things around a little bit. So he was 12th at Wentworth, he was 5th at the Italian Open, and his putter really started to pick up then. You know, whilst he's got a couple of indifferent results since, he missed a cut at the US Open, he missed a cut at the Travelers. He did show some form again at the Open de France. You know, we know he's got a decent record at Le Golf National anyway. But he was second after day one there. And then you may recall he had this issue when he was coming back from France, because he was due to go and play Open qualifying. And the guys at Air France lost his clubs, or they couldn't get them to him on time. So he had to pull out of open qualifying, which clearly he'd got as part of his plan to get through and to try to qualify for Carnoustie. So that's left him two chances, one of which was the Irish Open. And to be fair to GMAC, his record at the Irish Open is pretty poor. Now, he's pretty backed regularly to do well on that, and regularly he doesn't actually perform there. For whatever reason, whether there's extra pressure with him being at home, or there are other factors, family, friends, it's going to be difficult to put your finger on it, I think. But he comes into the Scottish Open now, and he's got to be super, super focused to do something this particular week. Now, earlier on, is the price has dropped a little now. I got 100 to 1 with him earlier on. And for me, that was a price that was worth taking on for a player that has got a fantastic record in Scotland. He lost a playoff at the Dunhill Links going back to 2004. He was third again in 2011. Second at the Diageo Championship early on in his career at 2004 as well. He won the Scottish Open in 2008. If you look at the last six times that he's competed in Scotland, he's finished in the top 25 of those six times. There's something that clearly he's quite comfortable on this, in this neck of the woods. He wants the Open he wants to get into the Open Championship. He wants to play the Ryder Cup. He's got to do something pretty dramatic, I think. And the other thing you look at when they played Gullen back in 2015, he finished 31st overall. But if you dig into that, rounds of 66 over the first 2 days, he was second going into the Saturday. Mm. So clearly got on with the track. And I think for me, at 100 to 1, and there's still 90s around, there's still a few bookies still to come up, so there may well still be that kind of price available in the morning. That's a price that is well worth taking on, in my view.
He's a definite, genuine Lynx golfer. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and on one of these, I always struggle when it's on a longer track with McDowell and he's having to use, woods to either hit some of the par fives or to play into some of the longer par fours. And with the setup likely to be, it's going to be firm and fast this week, he's not going to use or need to use those. He's not going to need to use those clubs quite as regularly. I think, for me, he's going to feel much more at home. He should be super motivated for this. He should be absolutely ready and raring to go for this. Given the relative prices you've got for some of the players that you could build a similar kind of argument for a similar kind of reasoning, that seemed, to me, to be a price well worth taking on. And the other guy I've backed, and I can't not back him really, is Raphaël Jacquelin. So on him last week, I was on him 3 years ago when he finished second here. Given that he was available, when he still is available, 175 to 1, given how well he played last week, he was one of those that topped greens in regulation last week. So clearly that part of his game is absolutely bang on. We've talked about his performance here 3 years ago, and he played particularly well. He does play well in the Scottish Open, full stop. He's got a couple of runner-ups finishes here. He's got three more top tens. He always seems to pull his game round as he plays by the coast. He's one of those players that's a strong coastal player. I don't think this is going to be a pushover, and any kind of trickier, more challenging course of any description that's not just a birdie fest is right up his alley. Mm. I can't, again, as a kind of player who can hold his form, there's no justification in my mind, having backed him last week, having backed him 3 years ago, that I can conceivably leave him out of the team this week. So he's in. He's already been backed. So those are the two that I've gone through. I mean, there's a few more, but yeah, Poulter is another one that he's close. I'm gonna have to make a decision on
is,
that.
Is Mikko Ilunen of the same kind of ilk to someone like a Jacquelin? Because he's starting to slowly turn it round, isn't he? The Finn. Because was he second or third for GIR last week, and he's 15th overall.
He's improving, yeah, and he has got a strong Lynx record as well. If you dig back through, not all of it, it's not all kind of in your face Lynx results when you dig through. But he has a strong a strong enough record to consider. There's a few other guys like that. I mean, one of the prices that sticks out to me is Matt Wallace at 100-1. There's not a massive amount of links pedigree there to really work from, but we've seen, you know, over the last few months, this guy can win. He's missed his last two cuts, and suddenly he's gone from, you know, winning a tournament, missed two cuts, and he's down at the 100-1 bracket. And, you know, again, going back to the list of names of these Rolex winners, does that feel out of kilter?
Not really, no.
And Matt Wallace doesn't.
He's young and talented. He's going to be far, far better than where he's at the moment.
Yeah, precisely. You know, what about
Danny Willett? He played well last week, didn't he?
He's played a couple of times in the last few weeks that he's shown some decent form. He's clearly, you know, turned that corner that he was, you know, languishing around for some time, and he's starting to come good, isn't he? And we know he's capable. We know he's
definitely
You've got capable.
Some serious decisions to make. So there's lots of tempting prices on some good players, and I suppose a lot of that is to do with the fact that the PGA Tour boys have come over just to put a bit of meat on the bones to that. And we've got Ricky Fowler, Patrick Reed, Hideki Matsuyama's playing. Matt Kuchar's playing. Louis Oosthuizen's come across from Florida. Phil Mickelson. You know, we've got some decent PGA Tour talent. Peter Uihlein, Charlie Hoffman. I've even seen Luke List.
Yeah,
of all people.
Yeah,
there'll be people getting excited. Luke List truthers will be getting excited. There's Party Marty Laird. They're all over.
125-1 available on Luke List, and you know. You were getting, what, 25s, 33s on him on the PGA Tour, you know, 2 months ago, 3 months ago. He's got right off the ball, I admit that. But, some people will just look at the name, look at the price, and it will just be an auto bet.
It's decent, absolutely, isn't it? What about you, Barry? Where are you at?
I'm very tempted to stick with Chris Wood. He's been playing some very solid golf recently, and I don't know what happened to him last week. He just seemed to get himself into good spots and then have a little stumble, do it again, stumble, and then just kind of flapped around a bit. But ended up finishing 14th. So that's...
Yeah, it's a good final round, wasn't it?
Paul's on him, wasn't he? And Paul said, he's putting out of his skin, isn't he, Wood?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, three events on the chart, he's putting really well. And it just needs to find a few more greens, and he's gonna win a tournament. So yeah, I can say that.
And he's talking down his game a little bit, but I think that's just he's trying to drive himself to really get it to that fine tuned moment. And look, we all know what a great links golfer he is. I'm basically, you know, listen back to me last week. I'm saying the same thing. But you know, 14th is only a couple of shots away from getting that place last week, and. The last time it was played here, he was 31st. Now, I know the golf course is going to be completely different, but he's coming off playing a very firm and fast course last week, and he'll be well tuned into playing the style of golf required to succeed this week. So I think he's going to be on board for me, and 40-1 is quite nice.
Well, it also rings nicely with the prices we mentioned earlier, isn't it? It's that kind of price point.
In that spot, yeah. And yeah. I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't have ambitions to win the Open Championship, but he might see this as a real opportunity to strike in a big event when a few of the eyes of the leading lights might be just looking towards next week instead of actually grabbing the win here.
Which is exactly what RCB did last year.
I think I might have a little cheeky punt on Keimer as well for the reasons we mentioned earlier. I love your angle on the motivation for GMAC, Paul. I think particularly with the bag being lost and not going to Open Championship qualifying, something about the Irish Open doesn't seem to. Maybe it's just too much hype going on.
There's something that kind of just holds him back each year, isn't there?
Is this the same as the John Deere Classic then? One spot.
No, it's three.
There's three at this, yeah.
That
plays into GMAC's hands, big style. Then
three in the top ten. So yeah,
yeah.
There's options.
Very, very. The course will fit his eye, and he'll probably be kind of relaxed now this week, having come away from the Irish Open. the clubs are back and everything will feel a little bit more chilled out, even though he will be pressuring himself to perform well. I think he'll be in a better space this week. So I love that shout for him. Andy Sullivan is very interesting as well, although I don't like how short his price is. So it's going to be a bit of a debate for me if I actually pull the trigger on that. You know, 20s to 25s, 28s in one bookie.
He's been really good and really consistent without winning. But yeah, that either suggests there's a win just around the corner, or
you're backing for a place, which is not ideal when it's 28-1. And you know, with that said, I might be tempted to try hunt out a little bit of value deep down the field and try pluck a little bomb bet, 150-1. You know, grab one of the eight places bookies. And see can you strike gold that way?
Yeah. Yes.
If one of those does come to my mind, I will tweet it out. Nothing's really jumped out at me so far though.
No, it's an interesting week. I think there's a lot of different factors to consider with it. So, but yeah, that's kind of the same with me. I've only got to the point where two are definitely in so far, and I'll make some decisions overnight and get that firmed up for kind of lunchtime-ish tomorrow, I expect.
It's certainly the star of the show. I think I saw some numbers saying, isn't it virtually double the world ranking points this week, the Scottish Open, as opposed to the John Deere Classic?
With the field that's out there, even with the likes of, you know, Stenson's pulled out today, Norrin was an early withdrawal, and Tommy Fleetwood's pulled out as well. So even with those three guys not in attendance, it's still going to be a strong event. So yeah, that makes sense.
Let's talk John Deere Classic. It's always the warm-up event on the PGA Tour, and they run a direct charter flight into the UK directly after the tournament closes. So I think quite a few of the players use that free facility just to keep the cost down. So you do get a fair few reasonable players that get involved in this. Just from a betting perspective this week, Francesco Molinari makes his tournament debut. So again, he's playing the PGA Tour over and above the Scottish Open warm-up event. So that's an interesting strategy. Based upon his form at the moment, you're not getting anything better than 10-1 though on Francesco. He's the favourite for this. You've then got the likes of Zach Johnson, DeChambeau, the defending champion Ryan Moore, the wunderkind Joachim Niemann, who we got a place back with last week, Mr. John Deere, Steve Stricker, Kyle Stanley, Chesson Hadley, Austin Cook, and then we're down into a bit more of the rank and file of the PGA Tour. There's a couple of names that jump out, like the likes of Siwoo Kim, Danny Lee's playing, Nick Watney, Bill Haas. He's struggling at the moment, is he, Haas? There's nothing coming at all from Haas right now this season. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty much stock par 71. It's upstate Illinois, tree-lined, but it's a short course, but it's got very wide fairways. The greens aren't that small. They're quite receptive as well. They set this up so it's scorable, and just to make that point in terms of the scorability that we see every year here: 16 under, 20 under, 26, 22, 20, 19, 22, 20, 22, and 18 under par. So I think we can safely say we need to hit quite a few birdies this week. It isn't a difficult golf course. Plotters and bombers can equally contend and win around here. I mean, Bryson DeChambeau is one of the longest you'll see, although he's quite straight off the tee. And then you also get the likes of a Ryan Moore, a Brian Harman, Zach Johnson, Steve Stricker winning it. So, you know, it's all sorts can win this. But one thing you must have, and it's very similar to the Greenbrier last week, the thing that absolutely imperative is that very, very hot putter. If you take the last eight tournaments here, the average in terms of putts per GIR, you know, putting average, is eighth in the field. and nothing, no other skill set gets anywhere close to that. It helps if you can also hit the ball close. So proximity to hole is another statistic that I'm looking at closely this week. Form of players in is interesting. It kind of reminds me again of the Greenbrier last week. You're not seeing anybody apart from Jordan Spieth in 2015 when he came direct from the US Open, and that was the season of his life, wasn't it? Where basically he was holding everything and playing out of his skin. He won here at 4-1 in 2015.
Yeah.
But apart from him, form in, 14th for DeChambeau last year. Ryan Moore the year before that was 17th, although he'd been 8th after 54 holes at the Travelers. Then we had miscut for Harman, 23rd and 6th for Jordan Spieth in 2013 when he won here for the first time on the PGA Tour. And Zach Johnson when he won this. Now, Zach Johnson, when he won this in 2012, was a 12-1 shot, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And he came in with direct form of 64 on the Travelers and 41st from the US Open. So 12-1. But already in that season, he'd finished second at Harbortown, second at the Players Championship, and he'd won at Colonial, and he was 12-1. And that just breaks my heart when I see him at 12-1 in the betting this week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just can't back him at that price.
I know. He's tempting whenever he comes here because obviously he's got such a strong record. But
he was 28-1 for this last year. Believe it or not.
Yeah. Well, after that kind of spell of results, he'd kind of dropped away a little bit.
And if he was 28-1, I know that you'd be on him, I'd be on him, and probably Barry would be on him. Mm. But 12-1.
It's tight, isn't it?
There's nothing in there, is there? You know, you can't say with 100% confidence that Zach Johnson is going to win this week. And at 12-1, I'd be looking for, you know, something in there that's... He's playing a lot better. He showed at the Travelers, didn't he? He started very, very quickly. It just seems to be something just slightly amiss there with Zach still. His putting isn't the standard that it usually is. I mean, I was checking it out today. He's not in the top 80 or 90 for strokes gained putting this season.
It's shown a little bit of the putter. It had come back at a couple of events, but it's still a bit sporadic, isn't it?
That's a win-only price, isn't it?
12s, yeah. Yeah. Unless you're going to stick your entire week budget on it.
Yeah. Bryson DeChambeau's the defending champion. I don't think he's ever defended a title in the past. That doesn't, you know, Daniel Berger's done it. That isn't automatically a bad thing. I just, again, 12-1 on Bryson DeChambeau. And if we're looking at it in terms of need and want, you know, and desire, Francesco won a few weeks ago. Bryson DeChambeau's in the automatic spots, I think. The last spot at the moment for the Ryder Cup. You know, he's got some big opportunities coming up. I still think he'll probably be right in the mix this week because he's just playing so well. But again, 12-1. Does he win? Potentially. But I'm not sure. Ryan Moore's another one I'm struggling with because he's putting. You and I, Barry, have been on Ryan Moore at various points across this year, haven't we? And you just watch him and you tear your hair out. You know, 10 feet, 12 feet, 13 feet, 9 feet, and he converts like 1 in 5.
Bang on average when your money is on him, but yeah, it doesn't hit that high variance putting week, it seems, often enough. It's a shame. He's one of my favourite golfers, and the talent levels he has, he should have more wins.
Mm.
Something's in there just blocking that putter from really heating up when it matters.
Yeah. The Wunderkinds at 20-1, Joachim Niemann. I can't. This course, to me, this tournament, you need at least one outing here to win. That, you know, I think the last person to win here on debut at the course was Sean O'Hare back in 2005. And what we, you know, that's 13, 14 renewals ago. I do want someone here with a bit of course experience. Even Bryson DeChambeau played here and missed the cut, but at least he knew the course. And actually, if you look at his numbers, he'd hit loads of fairways and loads of greens, and he was back at a time when he was putting really badly and he missed the cut. So there's something in that. So I can't touch yoking at that. The one that I've already backed, the one that I've already tipped, and I've had in mind for this since probably a fortnight ago, is Chesson Hadley. And I just think Hadley is playing phenomenal golf this year. There is something in here about players that have not won for a period of time. There's a lot of tour maidens that win here for the first time. We know that Hadley isn't that. He's won once on the PGA Tour, but he's not exactly a multiple PGA Tour winner. And he's just played some fabulous golf this season. And he's ranked fifth on the PGA Tour for proximity to hole. All of his numbers are superb. He's brilliant on par threes. It's an interesting one here. The par threes are really, really easy. Yeah, I think they're either the easiest or the second easiest on the PGA Tour. And it's rare to see a set of par threes that play as easy as around here. So if you look at DeChambeau last season, he was 6 under for the par threes. Now, it's not often you see that, is it?
No, it's an impressive number.
The year before that, Ryan Moore was 4 under, Spieth 3 under, and Brian Harman was 5 under for the par fives the year he won. So for me, par three performance on the predictor model, or just par three birdie or better scoring average, anything you can see there are players that are great on those one shot holes.
They particularly short, Steve. Is that the reason?
Yeah, sure. There's no, because those ones at Greenbrier last week are renowned for being very testing, and there were plenty of doubles and bogeys going around from a lot of the field last week on the par threes. If you noticed, a lot of 210, 220 length holes at the Greenbrier in terms of the short holes.
Yeah,
but around here it's nothing like that. You're looking at one. I'm trying to find the scorecard, but in my mess of a studio here, but I can't. I think you're looking at 170, 180s.
In terms of they're
short. They're attackable.
Short irons.
So anything you can see positive from a par three perspective can't be a bad thing. And again, Hadley is absolutely fantastic on par threes this season.
Mm.
And I just think he's the sort that would win this. I'm seeing 33-1 and 40-1, which in this quality of field, I think that's a reasonable price for Chesson Hadley. I really do.
Yeah, he's capable of winning it.
Yeah. The other link I like, the link here, there's a very strong link for whatever reason between Puerto Rico and this tournament. So I'm seeing Jordan Spieth finish second at Puerto Rico. Bryson DeChambeau's finished second at Puerto Rico. And then you can even look at Scott Brown, Alex Checker, and players of that ilk that have won or contended around Puerto Rico. And they've all got top three, top five finishes here.
Okay.
And of course, we know that he won, I think he was 23 under, he won the Puerto Rico Open. That was a year I was on board him, 2013. He won it at a crazy price. And that's one thing you do notice with Hadley. Four-time winner on the web.com tour. Three of those victories have come at minus 19, minus 23 and minus 16. And that Puerto Rico Open win came at 21 under. I just think it's his kind of test. I really do. He went out last season in the last five groups on the Saturday. And that's when he was a pure web.com player. I just think 12 months on, he must feel now that he belongs on the PGA Tour. He's had some fantastic results.
Yeah,
I just think that he would pop up and you would not be shocked in the slightest.
No, I can see it. He's been playing some good stuff, hasn't he?
He has been playing some outstanding stuff, Hadley. I think it was ninth last time out where he was second strokes game putting. And I've often said to you, Paul, you've got to take Hadley. He can be very, very, very flagrant off the tee. He can really be, just hitting far too many drivers and just hitting no fairways whatsoever. But it was noticeable last time out at Potomac on that really tough course. Calmed down, started to hit a decent number of fairways, decent number of greens, and the putter was red hot.
Mm.
And you know, with Hadley, he's very one of these players that once he's found something and his ball striking improves, he's so good with that putter. He can really just string contending performances together.
Yeah, yeah.
The other one I like at a bigger price, and I was actually slightly surprised I was getting this about him, 80-1 on Chesreven.
Right.
Now, you're looking at, we know around here, plotters, good putters, guys that play well upstate. He's won the Canadian Open. I know he's only won once, but this season, that's almost a good thing with the way that the PGA Tour is, the winning profile is looking like. But Reavy, he's finished second at TPC Boston. And this year, he's finished second twice at Scottsdale and also the week after at Pebble Beach, Pro-Am, low scoring. And a couple of outings ago, he was sixth at TPC Southwind, the one that DJ won the week before the US Open.
Yep. Yeah.
So I think Reavy, who has shot a 61 round here...
He just needs to putt well, doesn't he? Yeah. His short game's there, he's just got to... Well, his chipping game's there, he's just got to get that putter going. And that's going to make or break with him. Because from tee to green, he tends to be very, very strong as well, doesn't he?
Fairway and greens, outstanding. There was just something, you know, he putted a lot better at Southwind.
Mm.
And just with the fact that he's finished fifth here... I think it was two or three outings ago. He shot a 61 here. He's got a number of top 20s. And you just look at his early days on the PGA Tour. Anything low scoring, bent grass positive across places like Boston and other places upstate in America or Canada. You just get the feeling with him that 80-1 in this field for a guy that's got two runner-up finishes in the top six in his last three... In term, that's sixth at Southwind. I think that's a reasonable price for him.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
So they're the two I'm definitely with. I'm going to choose one more, and that'll be me.
Mm. Very good, very good. Anything you fancy, Barry?
I like Hadley as well. Love everything you're saying, and putting well, striking the ball well. Plenty of space for him to hit.
This is it. You're absolutely spot on there, Barry. There's quite a lot of width off the tee here, and that'll play to his strengths, because if he hits the short stuff, he's dangerous.
Yeah. One outsider I was looking at who has a pretty damn solid record here, but is out of form, which is nicely reflected in his price, is Daniel Summerhayes. He's out there for between 200 and 300 to 1, depending what firm and places combination you want to take.
Mm.
Listen to this, Barry. Rogers last year, 125. Rick Lamb was 400 to 1. A year before that, 140 to 1, Ben Martin. 300 to 1, Wee Kim. 200 to 1, we had Hoffman of the Morgan variety, and then another 150, 125 to 1 and 400 to 1 each way places. That was 2016. Yeah, Tom Gillis was 500 to 1 in 2015 when he was in a playoff with Jordan Spieth. So it happens year in, year out here. You do get some big priced players getting in the mix here.
Yeah.
How you find them, heaven only knows.
Who knows? Yeah, well, one who caught my eye last week, finished just outside the top 10, had a good week of putting. He was a little bit ahead of the field average for the week. It was Mackenzie Hughes.
Yeah, there's something in that, yeah.
So he's out there for 150 to 1, eight places.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say JJ Henry. I keep messaging Paul every time JJ actually makes a birdie. I've got to put him in my Barracuda Championship team, Paul.
He's got to make sure he misses a couple of cuts before the Barracuda keep his price at something sensible.
But he's the sort just starting to find something. So yeah, there's something out there at a very big price. We've just got to try and get our heads around it. Rob Oppenheim's another one. There's a crazy link here between the DAP Championship on the web.com tour. Now they play that in a golf course called Canterbury Golf Club. And it's played, Canterbury Golf Club, which is in Ohio. So fairly close, right? Now, 2016 was the first time they played that tournament, and Bryson DeChambeau, lo and behold, won it. And he beat Nicholas Lindheim, Rory Sabatini and Scott Stallings. Now, Scott Stallings was in the top five here last year. Rick Lamb, who isn't particularly, you know, he's now not on the PGA Tour. He, the only result he got was here last year, Rick Lamb, and he was 10th in that tournament at Canterbury. And then last year, Nicholas Lindheim won it. So, you know, if you're listening and you fancy a long price bet, 200 to 250 to 1 available on Nicholas Lindheim right now. Chesson Hadley was second, and Rob Oppenheim was second as well, tied second. So, you know, there's some names over. Another one who finished fifth in that DAP Championship last year, but has been showing some decent form of late, and his price has been slashed. I think he got himself a Open Championship spot a couple of weeks ago. Bronson Bagoon. So, you know, if you fancy 100 to 1 about Bronson Bagoon, there's probably worse bets than that out there as well.
Bronson Bagoon.
And our old friend Joel Darman, who's been playing out of his skin recently.
There's some good stuff.
He was sixth at that DAP Championship last year. The trouble you've got now, Paul, is that in such weak fields, anyone that's showing anything's being slashed. So Darman's 80 to 1 this week.
Yeah. He will do after last week. He was prominent, wasn't he?
Bagoon, 100 to 1. Mm. Although I'm seeing him as short as 55 to 1 with Unibet, which is a crazy, crazy price.
Yes, a bit of variance there.
Don't tell me, Paul. Don't tell me, Peter Malnati, yeah?
No. I've backed two. Chris Kirk is one of the short price ones. I like Kirk, actually. I think he's a good player. He's, you know, if you're looking for a decent wedge player, a decent putter, Kirk kind of fits the bill for that for me. He's got a couple of top 22s here over the years, and he was sixth going into Sunday back in 2013. So he's been in the mix in and around here over the years without actually putting, you know, posting what you really see as a tangible result. But, you know, over the last few months, he's been hitting some decent greens. He keeps popping up on leaderboards. In April, May time, he was hitting a lot of greens. He topped the putting at St Jude on his last start. And this is back to bentgrass, which is by far his better surface, in my view. So if he's putting well generally, and then you get back to a decent putting surface, I think you might find a bit of an explosion there. He's had some sneaky under the form radar. 8th in Texas, 11th at Fort Worth, 6th, as we said, at St. Jude. We took a putt in. I think there's a little bit of juice in that price with Chris Kirk, in my view. And the guy at a longer price is one who caught my eye at the US Open. And it was interesting you were talking about about Puerto Rico, because he's also finished top 10 there, which I checked out while you were talking, is Aaron Baddeley. And again, if you want someone who's who likes a bit of width or needs a bit of width off the tee, because it's going to actually help him on his cause to find the greens in regulation and then actually have a chance to make some putts.
He played well at the US Open, didn't he?
He did, yeah. 25th he finished. Mm. And that was pretty, you know, that was fairly out of the blue because he hadn't been playing particularly well. But 25th at the US Open. He's got that top 10 at Puerto Rico, which is interesting. He's finished top 10 here in the past as well. And I took the 150 to 1 with 8 places on that. Because he's that kind of player who can win. He knows, you know, he can get himself into a situation and he can get over the line. He's capable of doing it. He's done it before. Not showing a massive amount, but so that US Open form is quite tangible, I think. And this isn't a particularly strong field. So can he get a top 8? Surprised me at all, actually. So those are the two that have caught my eye. Wesley Bryan caught my eye. I haven't backed him yet. I was waiting for some more prices, but the price seemed a little bit tight.
Would you ever back Wesley Bryan again, Barry, after that tournament a few weeks ago at St Jude?
I don't know. I've been he might be temporarily on the X list. What price?
I do like Chris Kirk at 55 to 1. Statistically, you know, I always look for key stats. He ticks every single box, Chris Kirk, this week. Yeah. The only thing I don't like about him is the fact that he's been so inactive. He hasn't played since St Jude, has he? And that's the kind of thing where you've got your list of players and you go, I'm looking for reasons to get rid of people. And you'd look at Kirk and you'd go, I'm not picking him because he hasn't been active. And you'd put a line through him. And then he goes and wins and you go, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't pick Chris Kirk. That's a decent price, isn't it? 55-1.
I think so. He's been on my radar for a few months now.
I always keep a very close... Because he's four-time PGA Tour winner. He knows how to get the job done, Chris Kirk.
Well, he does. And what I was originally picking up on my analysis was the greens that he was hitting around that kind of early to late springtime. But the fact now is his putting has been getting progressively better. You listen to this, his last four putting attempts... in terms of putting average, 1.84, so he's 67th in the field at the Players. 1.76, so he's tied nearly a tenth off of it for the next event at the Fort Worth. 49th in the field for that. Then his next attempt, 1.68, so again, best part of another tenth off it, 22nd in the field at Memorial.
And then caught fire at Southwind. Yeah.
On his last start, and virtually another tenth off it, 1.59, and he was first in the field. So, his putting is... If it converges with a week where he gets back to those kind of mid-70s greens and regulation stats, he's going to win the tournament.
Mm. Yeah. You might have sold me on Kirk because he's on my very, very short list. Mm. But he's in kind of grey writing because of that inactivity. And that's the kind of thing that will haunt me, like Kevin Na last week. He's like, Kevin. And then you go, you get there on a Sunday night and you've got those players and you go, oh, my Kevin Na, I cannot believe it.
Well, you're desperately doing a birdie, a bogey dance, trying to get him to drop a shot.
I cannot believe it. I cannot believe I left him out. But yeah, he's one to sleep on, Kirk. Mm. And I've got a space or two in my team. I think there's worse bets out there than that.
Mm.
Very much so.
Indeed.
Right. So that's this week's show. Covered the John Deere Classic and of course. The Scottish Open. As I said at the top of the show, we are going to be recording a an Open Championship preview this week. We've scheduled to record it on Wednesday before the semi-final, and hopefully we'll be able to get it active and published Thursday morning. So I know that thousands of you listen to the US Open preview, so hopefully we can get the same kind of response on the Open Championship one this week that we're going to record. So looking forward to that. I appreciate your time, gentlemen. Thank you.
Yeah, best of luck, guys.
Good luck, everybody.
It's coming home. Remember that, guys, yeah? It's coming home.
Only took an hour and 10 to get that in. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Fingers crossed.
Cheers, chaps, and thank you for listening. Goodbye.